boys go around helping people in the night?
When I'm done with them, they don't need much help. Before I kill you, I'm gonna throw your baby out the window.
On episode 32 of the Cut Print Film Podcast, it appears Ben Affleck's wife is missing. The boys are on the case. Here are your hosts, Jeff, Dave, and Chris.
Greetings, home dwellers, and welcome to episode 32 of the Cut Print Film Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Chris Evangelista.
I'm also one of your hosts, Jeff Rollins.
I'm two of your hosts, Dave Costell.
Oh, no. Stop multiplying over there.
Oh, boy.
We are a movie podcast. We always forget to say that, so we should probably do that right now.
Yeah, we talk about movies.
Yes.
And boy, ghouls and gals, do we have a show for you tonight.
Yes.
It's a Halloween show.
It's Shocktober.
It's Metallotober, guys.
No, you're the only one who thinks that.
Off to Never Never Land.
Not to be confused with next month's Dramavember.
Drama mean Vember, where we all take drama mean because we're all going on trips.
Yeah, we're on a ship right now.
If you're
on the fence about this podcast, just subscribe and then
Subscribe first.
Give us a 5-star rating and then listen to it.
And then unsubscribe.
Yeah.
No, you don't even have to unsubscribe. Just let it every week, just let it automatically download to your iPhone.
That. Yeah, we're trying to pad our numbers.
Yeah, please.
And pad bras. This room. Yeah. Oh.
like an insane asylum.
I'm padding pad the walls here.
We probably should have talked about what we were going to do before we started recording, but, let's go,
do a round robin tournament of basketball.
You want to start with the worst movie we watched this week?
I probably watched it by myself.
Oh, that's
talking
right.
About the worst movie, because I watched a bad movie and I know what movie you're talking about, which is deliciously
good. Okay, I get what you're saying there, because I was really confused. But I think I've also watched a worse movie than the one we're about to talk about this week.
Now that we're all confused and the listeners are tuning out.
I don't know where I am right now.
Let's get into it.
All right, we're going to talk about three movies tonight. Yes. So Jeff saw a movie and then we all saw two different movies. Yes. So Jeff, take it away, please.
I saw the movie Annabelle, which is a spinoff of James Wan's film The Conjuring.
Right.
Did both of you guys see
The Conjuring?
Yeah, The Conjuring.
Yeah, it's the Italian version.
Mamma Mia.
Mamma Mia, The Conjuring.
You know, all that stuff. Gabagool, and so forth.
Annabelle is the doll.
Yeah, Annabelle's the doll.
I did see The Conjuring, and I like The Conjuring. I think it's really good, actually.
I didn't love The Conjuring, and I don't love James Wan films.
I like all his films except Saw. By the way, I'm writing a massive retrospective upon Saw that no one is reading. So, if you have a moment or two, please, just click. You don't have to read it. Just click on it so I can see the click, and I'll be like, oh, I'll believe you read it.
I'm reading it.
Thanks, Jeff. You're the only one.
This is a spinoff of The Conjuring where...
Well, let me just say, what I liked about The Conjuring was, even though it's a very generic story, I liked the way he told it.
I have no problem with the way he directs horror films. I have no problem with that. I do have a problem with... He loves going to demons.
Yeah,
he loves it.
Can't it just be ghosts?
And everybody's either possessed by a demon or there's an inanimate object possessed by a demon, which is what we have with Annabelle.
Okay, so and, how was it?
Are there any speed demons?
No, there's no speed demons. I don't know where that question came from.
Are there any demonoids in this?
Nope, no demonoids.
Okay.
That's a torrenting service, if I'm not mistaken. Annabelle wasn't directed by Juan. He just produced it.
Right.
It's directed by the guy that did Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
Oh, no.
And The Butterfly Effect Part 2.
Oh, all right. Well, if you're going to start with a Butterfly Effect film.
He has a great pedigree of film behind him, and he's just incompetent. That's the only problem, really, with this film is the direction. The cast is great.
Right.
The story's not bad. I mean, who isn't creeped out by a doll?
Right.
It's just so poorly done. He packs in as many cliches as he can possibly pack in. There's a creepy priest. There's creepy kids.
Enough.
Is there a dark basement?
There's a dark basement.
Thank God.
Absolutely.
Unlike this one.
This basement's lit. It's just like... Oh, and that's the other problem I had with it. He does a lot of jump scares, which I've talked about ad nauseum.
The worst.
They're the worst things to ever happen to horror. But every time he does one of these scares, it's preluded by all this sound being vacuumed out and somebody reaching slowly towards an object.
I hate that telegraphed.
It's horrible. Ugh. It's horrible. And it sucks out any type of suspense there is that you would normally get from a jump scare.
Right.
The only thing I can say is it's never like a cat jumping out at somebody, or it's never a bowl falling out of a closet or anything like that. But I gave it a 4 out of 10 because it's not terrible.
I heard it's scary, which
there's some scares. There's 3 great scenes in particular, but I would wait for Netflix because this is definitely going to hit Netflix.
Yeah, this movie in general. After I read your review, I was like, oh, this sounds like a movie I'll watch at like 2 a.m. on Netflix.
It's
half
not
asleep.
It's not offensive,
right?
Like it's not so bad that it's offensive. Like The Purge, which I watched last night, I wish I could forget about it.
You wish you could purge it from your memory,
if you could. But yeah, Annabelle, you know, watch it when it comes out on video.
Well, speaking of offensive, let's go on to our next film.
Do we have to?
Sure, let's do it.
Left Behind?
Is that what we're talking about? Good work, Dave. Yes.
Dave had a pot of beans and he tripped and they went everywhere. There's baked beans all over the carpet.
Here's my notes for this movie. This movie blows. That's all I got.
So you literally wrote that down. I can see it from here.
All right. So Left Behind was your baby.
Oh,
Chris,
yeah.
So why don't you speak highly of it?
So Left Behind, it's adapted from a series. There are 16 of these books, I think, which is insane. A series of books. They're Christian books, if you will. And they're all about the rapture, which is this Christian belief that someday Jesus, he's going to come back and all the true believers, they're going to vanish from earth. They're going to go up to heaven without their clothes, because I guess you don't need clothes in heaven.
No, that was weird.
Yeah, you don't need clothes in heaven. But
just a bunch of children's clothes was weird to me.
Yeah,
like,
heaven is just naked kids everywhere.
That's good. That sounds like hell to me. But
so
what do I know? Wait, can I interject?
Sure.
Did you say this is a series of 16 novels?
Let me confirm. But so it's a series.
I can't believe who would read that. Who would read 16 entries in a series about this?
I don't know.
Because if the screenplay was derived from any of these novels, this is bad, bad literature.
Is this movie like?
All right, let me correct myself. The original series has 12 books.
That's much more reasonable.
Then there's a spinoff called Left Behind: The Kids. Are
they children's?
Yes, they're children's books. There are 40 of those.
I'm going to throw up into my own
oh
lap.
Oh, my God.
I'm
going
to throw up all over this fucking table.
So that means there's a total of 52 Left Behind books. So
what could you possibly say?
I don't know. Well,
the Rapture. There's one, The Leftovers book.
What's that about? Like Thanksgiving the next day?
No, it's the
Tom
same
Perotta?
Premise. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It's the HBO show.
Tom Piranha, who's that? Is that my loan shark?
Which, it's strange that these both came out the same year, but The Leftovers is about a galaxy times more.
Well, The Leftovers isn't Christian either.
It's
not a fundamentalist-based novel at all.
It's not hogwash, if you will.
Hogwash.
Yeah.
So my question was, the books are Christian, infused.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
With
they're nonstop. They're not only that, but they're anti everything except Christian. Like, one thing I will say about this movie, it doesn't really feel that Christian. It leaves out a lot of the religious elements in general, just for like a generic thriller nonsense.
Well, even the Muslim guy's in it.
Yeah.
He's not like a bad dude.
Like, the books have all these like weird anti-Semitic things thrown into it just because, you know.
That's strange.
Yeah.
But this thing feels like it was written by an imbecile.
Yes.
Somebody that's never interacted with anybody other than the people in his own small church group.
Right, yeah.
Because these characters are so broad.
Yeah.
What's her name? Nikki Whalen, she plays the character of Girl. No, she's the flight attendant.
Girl is my favorite character.
Yeah,
in this
she
film.
Plays flight attendant Girl. That
she
Nicolas
doesn't have a
Cage,
fucking name.
No, she does.
Oh.
But her character is Girl.
Oh, yeah.
It's Girl is her name.
It's Girl with bosom.
Right.
And
when
Nicolas,
she's like, I can't handle this. Ah.
Yeah. Nicolas Cage is
my favorite character name in history.
Rayford Steele.
Yes, not just Ray, but Rayford Steele.
I love this character name. Oh, it's and so good. Nicolas Cage, I couldn't tell if he actually recorded his scenes on set. Or
he just Skyped in
yeah. And then they did his audio in post through a voicemail message.
I mean, he's done some phoned in performances, but this is
he's almost like he's in another movie where it's just him.
Nicolas Cage has some gambling debts to pay off.
he must be in such the red of a hole.
So he's doing pretty much anything people offer him at this point, which is why he's going to be on the podcast next week. By the way, I forgot to tell everyone.
Scene you see him, he sits down at the airport with his daughter, and like I'm like, this isn't that bad. Nicolas Cage he's acting like Nicolas Cage. He's talking.
There's some scenes where he is sort of trying, and then there's other where he's just
yeah, but
there.
Even by the end of this scene, he had given up.
Oh yeah, you're not getting any crazy Cage in this.
Unfortunately,
this is Cage sleepwalking, right. Much like Denzel Washington does
right.
now.
Yeah,
well, but he gives such a boring performance, but it's not even him that makes this movie so bad it's good.
Right.
It's these broad characters,
This movie doesn't feel like any movie I've ever seen.
Because it isn't.
Yeah,
it's not a movie.
It doesn't behave like a movie. It's just like scenes. It's just things happening.
Yeah, that's true. It's like a Lifetime movie.
Yeah.
Not even that, because like Lifetime movies feel more like movies than that. I can't even explain
This is so cheap.
Right.
There's two settings.
Right.
There's the plane.
And then the mall.
And the mall, right. And they seemingly never get out of the plane.
No.
It's insane. Well, the mall they get out of, but then every other scene where it's supposed to be Nicolas Cage's daughter's character on the street somewhere, it's still the mall.
The mall parking.
You're not fully admitted. You're at the mall.
Yeah. She's at the stores connected to the mall, basically, outside.
I mean,
she made it to the Target, like, 5 feet away.
I laughed out loud so many times during this thing.
My favorite laugh out loud moment is... There's a scene where Nicolas Cage, he has his wife, played by Leah Thompson. Remember her?
Yeah.
She's in this movie. She's a wacko, quote unquote. And so he has a suspicion that...
Is that her from Back to the Future?
Yeah.
It doesn't look like her.
Well, she's older now. So
yes.
People age, Dave. So he has a suspicion based on her her beliefs that, oh, maybe this is the rapture. So he tells girl... Go out and get me the missing... Apparently, there's only two flight attendants on this.
Which I've never seen in my life.
Yeah, so there's girl and then there's other girl. Yes. Other girl vanishes.
Well, no, there's blonde girl and brunette girl. So brunette girl vanishes.
So brunette girl vanishes. Nicolas Cage says, go out, get me her things. I want to root around in them. So he's rooting around in her things. He finds a day planner. And on the last page, written in huge letters with three exclamation points, it says, Bible study. And so then... you need like two sources.
And this is my favorite part.
So his co-pilot disappears. He digs through his co-pilot's things. He finds his co-pilot's watch, and engraved on the face of the watch is John 3:16. And so he's like, well,
that settles it.
He's like, that's it.
That reminded me of when I was a teenager, my friend stole this novelty watch from his dad, and when it was a regular watch when you were looking at it, but then when you put it on and your body temperature heated it up, it would the face of the clock would disappear and it would just say time to fuck. That's what I was hoping was going to be on the watch, but I was disappointed.
Oh my god. So yeah, it's a silly nonsense movie, and I
didn't make it to the end. What happens at the end? Do they all go to heaven?
No, well,
with
it ends.
The dogs?
No, the dogs don't go to heaven. That's the problem with this.
All dogs go to hell.
Yeah.
Dave.
Oh.
So basically, the movie implies that pretty much every child on Earth goes to heaven, which I call bullshit.
Yeah, I've met some pretty shitty children.
Yeah,
there's got to be some kids on the River Styx.
Yeah, I say this in my review too. Just like really, there's not one bad kid on Earth. So all kids go to heaven. Dogs, they don't get to go.
Even the problem child went to heaven?
I guess so.
Yes, Junior Healy.
Yeah, I guess he's in heaven, and because he never ages, and he's still a child.
Oh, we got to look up Junior Healy now.
And then at the end of the film, the plane, there's an emergency landing for the plane, and They couldn't afford a real emergency plane chute. You know that inflatable chute that looks...
Oh, my God. I know what you're going to say.
So they show everyone jumping off the plane, but they don't show the chute for the first, like, 10 minutes. Then it cuts away, and the chute... It looks like a bouncy thing they bought at Toys R Us, basically.
It looks like a crocodile mile.
It's like a slip and slide, basically, they bought. It's so small, it's embarrassing. And then they're all... Rayford Steele, his daughter, and then the third main character, whose name is Buck, played by solid block of wood.
He's riding the pussy wagon.
He is terrible.
That's a different Buck.
They stand in a row, and they look off to the horizon.
And holding hands.
Yeah, they're holding hands, and then Nicolas Cage says, like, oh, at least it's over. And then his daughter says, no, this is just the beginning.
Oh, I hope not.
And then the credits come up.
I can't stomach another one of these.
I'll watch it. If Nicolas Cage is in it, I'll watch it.
I would recommend this movie because it's, like I said, it's so bad it's good.
Right.
There's a lot of laugh out loud moments. Like, just the way they treat all these different types of people. There's a little person he plays the character of asshole.
Yeah, he's a jerk. And I understand.
For no reason.
I guess he's a jerk because everyone treats him like a mutant. In this movie, it's just like, a little person, you're so weird. Like, all right, it's time to stop movie. There's like a Muslim guy, there's a guy with tattoos.
It's like so poorly directed. It'll be like, I see you go to college, and then all of a sudden it'll like zoom in on her jacket.
There's a Texas businessman who's like closing deals on his phone in the plane.
He's like, just dump the stock.
And I'm
pretty sure his phone is like a 1998 flip phone too. Well, it's not like a modern phone at all.
And then my favorite character in the whole movie is this Asian guy.
Oh, yeah, I was just about to say it.
Who plays, I guess he's supposed to be a science buff. This guy, apparently, whoever wrote this has no idea about science at all. Has no idea how it works.
Or they've never met a human.
No, never interacted with people.
Science is the devil's tool, Jeff.
Well, of course it is. So this Asian guy with hooves is every time... They're trying to like figure out what happened to all these people that disappeared on the plane. He's coming up with stuff like it's aliens
because science,
Area 51. Yeah. It must be a weapon they harvested from it. Like,
stop.
What?
Yeah, this is a weird character. And then my other favorite character is there's a British woman. I couldn't tell.
Oh.
I couldn't tell if she was a real British woman or if not. But
oh God!
So she's
that was an American. There's no way. Hello, hello, hello.
She was like Dick Van Dyke and Mary Poppins, and they keep hinting that she's gonna have a bigger part to play, but she doesn't. Like in the books, there's the Antichrist plays a big part in the books, and they kept focusing on this girl so much. I was like, she's gonna be the Antichrist on the plane, but no, she's just on the fucking plane.
Yeah, and she's the one that tells them all that it's the rapture.
Yeah, she was like, when I was a child, I went to Bible camp.
It's like, the rapture, governor.
Tip.
Doesn't everybody know about the rapture? They act like atheists have no clue about anything Bible related. Like, we're just fucking assholes who walk around.
It's like, the Bible, what's that?
Yeah.
No, but I'll even put it on the other end of the spectrum. Even the Bible, the religious stuff, is so broad. It's...
Yeah, nobody
read anything.
Like, this doesn't feel like a religious movie. Like,
if Chris fucking just disappeared right now, I would be like, oh, fuck, it's the rapture. Yeah. That'd be my first thought.
It's either that or I gotta shit really bad.
Or you're wearing that Harry Potter invisibility cloak.
Yes.
I was wondering if this cup of coffee was a Horcrux.
All right, well, Harry Potter jokes kill the show.
Yeah, well, good night, everyone.
Yeah, we're done.
All right, well, we're only 18 minutes in, so we didn't get much out of Left Behind there.
There's not much to get out of it.
We're going to leave that movie behind.
Yeah. I mean,
no, but I do recommend watching this because
it's good.
As you're mentioning stuff, I forgot how much I enjoyed the badness of this film.
Like, I really think this is it's on the same level as like The Room and Birdemic.
It's far better than Birdemic.
Yeah.
That movie is nearly unwatchable.
Yeah, you can probably
on the sound alone.
You can get through this a little easier. And it's just, I don't know, it's just funny to watch how inept it is.
Oh,
You will openly laugh at just little things.
When the rapture happens, it's literally just a flash of light. And then just
somebody took a photo with a Fun Saver camera from the 80s.
So Rayford Steele's daughter, she's hugging her brother. There's a flash. And she's just hugging clothes, and it's just, it's ridiculous.
It's like she's taking part in one of those stuff your own scarecrow contests around harvest season.
And then the rest of the movie is her dodging things. Every piece of crashing debris in the universe comes at this character. Wherever she is, just like, she's in the mall, a car crashes in the mall. She goes in the parking lot, a plane crashes. It's everywhere she goes.
The best part is that everyone immediately starts stealing from each other.
They're looting immediately. Instantly. As soon as the rapture happens, they start looting, they start mugging. She is walking by herself down through a tunnel, and she slows down to allow a mugger on a motorcycle to steal her take purse. Her bag.
Yeah.
It's great.
It was an experience.
It is.
It's worth watching. So, yeah.
Order some wings, get some cheese fries, and laugh your hiney off.
It's in theaters now.
Behind.
Yeah, I guess it's in theaters now. I don't know what theaters.
All right. Well, we saw some good movies this week, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
Yeah. Or movie.
Yeah, we saw a good movie this week.
Good Girl.
Yes. No, you said it wrong.
Damn it.
Chris, you want to give it a shot?
It's called Gone Girl.
Yes, that you nailed it.
This is our first really anticipated movie of the year, right. I would say, besides Guardians.
Right.
Which I wasn't even on board for Guardians. I think this is the first movie all three of us were heavily anticipating.
Yeah, because I remember Chris being anticipating Guardians and Godzilla.
Right.
And that's
one of them turned out really good. One of them we will never speak of again.
Yeah.
But basically they're the big three are Gone Girl,
Chevy,
The Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost are the big three. But Gone Girl, Interstellar,
in my book.
And Inherent Vice.
Yeah.
And so this was the first of those three.
There's a small three too.
What is it? Tell us.
You don't know. Saturn. Hyundai,
Uranus,
and Kia.
Oh, you weren't I thought you were doing planets.
No,
Birdman, Whiplash, and Nightcrawler.
Yeah.
I would call them the other three.
Let's not.
But
you know,
we'll get to those.
Let's call them the medium three.
Okay. Yeah. But these big
call
three,
them the biggie three from Wendy's.
These are the three huge directors. That's what it is with these three movies.
These are three of the best directors.
They're very tall.
Today. They're like 6 feet tall.
And
seven.
It is exciting that we get a movie year where all three directors have a film out. That's great.
That is actually kind of crazy. So it's
all we're missing is a Coen Brothers film.
Right.
But I'll take David Fincher, Christopher Nolan, and Paul Thomas Anderson over a Coen Brothers film. I don't think I'd switch any of these three out for a Coen Brothers film.
I don't know.
Fair enough.
Would you?
I don't know. Depends on the Coen Brothers film.
The Hail Caesar, the new Coen Brothers film.
All right. I wouldn't switch any
of these. Okay, see? I win.
All right, so...
Fine, Dave, fine.
Gone Girl is directed by David Fincher.
Yes.
And it's based on the book, the massively popular and successful and best-selling novel by Gillian Flynn, which came out last year, and we already have a movie. I find that stunning.
Right. Wait, that came out
last year? Last year. That was the book of the summer for 2013.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
That's fast.
See, I'm the only one of us who hasn't read the book.
Right.
And I want to talk to you about that. But
you're fired.
I guess I should do a plot synopsis.
Please do.
Because
we're spoiling this, by the
way. Oh, yeah. If you haven't seen it yet.
Spoil it like rotten eggs.
So,
this is a hard movie not to spoil, because a lot of it involves the twists.
Yeah,
but Jeff's review does a great job of not spoiling it. Right. I avoided it until after the film, but realized I could have read it.
I purposefully do not spoil movies in my reviews.
If you want to read that review, go to cutprintfilm.com.
That's our website.
It sure is.
All right, so a plot synopsis for Gone Girl goes a little something like this.
Gone Girl. It opens with a James Bond song.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
Okay.
On the day of his fifth wedding anniversary, Nick Dunn, played by Ben Affleck, returns home to find his wife, Amy, played by Rosamund Pike.
So
am
good.
I saying that right? Rosamund?
I say Rosamund.
Let's do Rosamund. I like that.
I say Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
That's a mouthful.
I know. I can't help it. It's just
Guildenstein, isn't it?
No.
He returns home to find his wife, Amy, is missing. Her disappearance creates a media frenzy, and Nick's awkward behavior and lies surrounding their marriage are interpreted by the media and public as sociopathy. As circumstantial evidence mounts against him, such as financial troubles and domestic disputes, Nick becomes the prime suspect in Amy's apparent murder. However, Amy is alive and well. And
what a twist.
Chris just twisted an entire lemon. Yeah. There's lemon juice everywhere. Amy is alive and has staged her own murder in order to frame Nick as revenge for his infidelity and misogyny during their marriage.
Right.
She has planted evidence for the police to discover: blood on the kitchen floor, hastily cleaned, a smashed coffee table, and a faked pregnancy.
Yes.
Hiding at a distant motel under the guise of Nancy, which is what I would use as my name.
Yeah.
Because I'm a Nancy boy. And I wear dresses. All right.
Okay. We get it, Jeff.
You guys understand?
We see the dress you're wearing.
Yeah. We all see the blouse.
Amy changes her appearance to start anew and destroy Nick's freedom and reputation.
Yes.
As Nick's chances of escaping prosecution dwindle, Amy is robbed in her motel room, losing thousands of dollars in cash. Left with only her car and no place to stay, she frantically calls her exceptionally wealthy first boyfriend, Desi Collins, played by a creepy Neil Patrick Harris.
Yeah, he's creepy, yeah, he's very good. Everyone in this movie is great.
Great casting. Believing that he has finally won her heart, Desi agrees to hide Amy at his luxury lake house.
Which, man, I wish he would hide me there.
Jesus Christ.
Man. I'd kiss him softly upon the neck.
I will gladly live with creepy Neil Patrick Harris if he lets me live at his lake house.
Palatial cabin.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was gorgeous. All right. Nick finds evidence of Amy's plot against him and convinces his twin sister Margot of his innocence. As the media continues to antagonize Nick, the siblings hire renowned defense attorney Tanner Bolt.
Oh, my God.
My favorite literary name in the last 2 years.
Yeah. He's up there with Rayford Steele.
Fucking superhero.
Yeah, to improve Nick's public perception.
Oh, who plays Tanner Bolt?
Oh, a man you might know is Tyler Perry.
Who is so good in this movie, I was shocked.
Yes, that's Medea for, for all the lay people.
Yeah.
He appears on a talk show to manipulate his image as sympathetic and honest. He claims that all he wants is for Amy to come home. His story is convincing enough to turn around the public's perception and even Amy's, who watches the interview with Desi and relishes the public's adoration of their marriage. Amy seduces Desi and murders him during sex.
Which is a shockingly shocking scene.
She returns home covered in blood in full view of the television crews parked outside their house. Amy confesses to Nick about the murder and her reasons for her return. She tells Nick that the man she was watching pleading for her return was the man she married, and that she wants him to be that person again. Nick plans to leave her once he has exposed her fabrications during an upcoming live television interview. However, Amy reveals she is pregnant, using sperm Nick stored at a fertility clinic. Nick reacts angrily, but he feels responsible for the child and wants to maintain his benevolent appearance.
Right.
He decides to stay with Amy, and they announce on television that they are expecting a baby together as credits roll.
Yes.
So.
What a good movie.
That's it for our show tonight.
Okay. So, Fincher does an amazing thing here, where the first 20 minutes of the movie feel like this cheesy romance film.
Yep.
And I don't know where the story's going. I start to feel like, what the fuck is this? Because like she has a journal and she's writing
and it's over narration.
It's overly pulpy and right. Romancy, like a pulpy romance novel. And it's like, it's even like a little surreal, the sugar dust scene. Like,
uh-huh.
It's weird stuff that Fincher doesn't normally do, or if he does, he does in like Benjamin Button, which is a fantastical movie.
No, yeah. It's not. Oh,
no,
fantastical. Sorry, I think it's fantastic. I hate that movie. Anyway.
So I was starting to be like, what the fuck is this movie?
Well,
like, I don't think I'm liking this. And then it makes the switch.
Yeah, where it's all staged.
It's all, it's fake.
It's phony writing. It's phony feelings. And as somebody that read the book, I was eating that up the way he did this.
Oh, yeah.
I loved the cheesy narration that she's giving as she's writing in this fake journal entry.
I met a boy today. I was like, oh, fuck this.
Yeah.
So, like,
and that's what I kind of wanted to talk to you about. How were you feeling?
Yeah,
how were you feeling initially, when you were sitting there listening to that, and how were you feeling when the twist came?
Right.
And Sam asked me afterwards if she's like, did you know it was coming? Like, did you figure it out? Because I'm one of those annoying ass people who has to like.
You're trying to figure the twist out. Did you know there was going to be a twist?
I figured there had to be because I'm like, what's going to happen?
Right.
Is this just going to be like the Zodiac?
Right.
Where they're like, where's Amy?
It's 2 hours and 20 minutes, yeah. So you've had to figure there's got to be something more to where's Amy.
There is like a slight weird, because you invest in Amy missing, that when she shows up, you do get like I was in like True Detective mode, but now I got to switch over to something totally different. But once you see how psychotic Amy is, the character is amazing. You kind of... you kind of start to like the characters. I didn't like Amy at first. I was like, Rosamund Pike is annoying me because even in the beginning of the film, she talks in like that weird whisper voice where she's like, Nick, we need the money for my trust fund. It's like really strange.
Yeah, I think the film did Fincher himself did an amazing job of setting this movie up in two halves, where the first half of the film we spend building Amy up as this saint and tearing Nick down as this horrendous person. Then when the switch comes halfway through, he starts tearing Amy down and building Nick back up.
I just want to interject here that I think a lot of people are going to give Fincher a lot of credit for this, but I think more than half of the credit really belongs to Gillian Flynn for this. Because not only did she write the book, her screenplay for this is so tight. And as someone who read the book, I was like...
Were you nervous?
Not even...
I was nervous.
I was nervous, but I was also a little like... I was surprised at how different the movie is while still being so much like the book. Because the movie is so, it's streamlined, and she does such a fantastic job of doing that. And I expected it to be a good Fincher film just because I know he's a good director. Yeah. So I was more impressed with her screenplay than I was with his directing. Just because it's so, I don't know, because like having read the book, I was just so impressed at the way she adapted it.
It's especially impressive because that's her book. So to be able to self-edit like that and cut the fat, because there is a lot of subplots in the book that really are not that interesting.
Right.
Like, I didn't love this book. Yeah, I thought it was a fun summer read.
Well, there's a bad movie in there. Like any other director, I can't.
It would have been shit, I think.
Yeah.
This could have been really bad because it follows that like kind of trashy.
Well, the
movie.
Book is trash. I know, Chris, you do not like me using that word or anybody using that word about this material, but I mean it in a nice way.
I feel like it's trashy
and pulpy.
No, I agree with it, but I also just feel like trashy sort of undersells it.
It's salacious. It's lurid. I'm gonna use better words than trash.
I'll say like the subject matter is trashy, but her prose is excellent. She is a very good writer. Like, I think the same thing that applies to the movie applies to the book, whereas if any other writer wrote this book, it would be like, I don't fucking give a shit about this book. But she has a really clean sort of prose.
She has a grasp on language.
Right.
And she basically just nudged you. Go ahead, turn the page.
Yeah.
Go ahead. You want to find out what happens next. I know you do. Turn that fucking page.
Yeah.
And Fincher does the same thing with the way he shoots this movie.
Oh, absolutely.
This is really staged as a whodunit. Perfectly, because I'm invested in figuring this shit out as it goes.
Like, yeah, even though I knew what was going to happen, I was still riveted. Like, I was still like, just like, oh, I gotta. And just right from the start, I thought that was really interesting. The credits, how they're just like, did you guys pick up about how the credits are like a split second? I love that because it's like it makes you uneasy because you're not used to that.
And they literally disappear into the frame, and it's.
Like, yeah, the opening credits for this movie, you see the like all the names like for a split second. It's like jarring just as it's happening. And I was like, oh, I'm already uneased, and I thought that was really cool.
And that score.
Yes.
By Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross.
Fantastic. Yeah.
That's a character in and of itself. That
it was strange, like, because I had listened to it so many times before, and then hearing it in the context of the film.
Same experience.
It was a strange experience that I've really never had before with a film.
Yeah.
I want to go back to David Fincher because we said that any other director would have totally fucked this up. But at the same time, there's no flashy David Fincher stuff going on here. It was very naturalistically filmed.
Flashy David Fincher in Zodiac, I don't feel.
This definitely has that like cold.
It felt to me like House of Cards. The first episode.
Yeah.
I'll say it actually even had the same color palette.
That's really what.
It's a bland color palette.
There's some shots in this that are so gorgeous.
Dude, everything's crisp.
There's one part where it's after like they've done like a day of searching for Amy, and it's like a shot of a street, and there's people crossing the street, and there's kids riding their bikes, and the sun is going down, and like that shot like took my breath away. I was like, this is gorgeous.
The opening shot had the same effect where Ben Affleck's just kind of stretching by the trash can.
Yeah.
for some reason that
and
shot.
And it's just a wide shot, and he's this tiny speck.
And he just kind of like looks back at the house, and he's just standing there. And it's, there's something about the way that was framed that it looked amazing.
It's so well filmed.
There's a lot of grays, whites. Right. It's very neutral browns. And I wrote in my review, that really allows the characters to take center focus. Like, you're not really distracted by any craziness going on visually.
Yeah, this is a character-driven movie from beginning to end.
Yeah. God, these characters are good.
Do you want to get into the actors after the break?
Yeah, let's take a break.
We could go through each one and spend a half hour on that.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's spend a half hour on each actor.
Okay, that's going to be a long podcast. So I hope you guys aren't doing anything today.
Yeah, there's like 20 actors in this film, so add it up.
See you in 10 hours.
Here at Cutprint Film, we do our very best to keep you in tune with the movie industry. We're revolutionizing the way you read movie reviews by putting them on the internet. Go to cutprintfilm.com and we will guarantee you a pleasant experience. We're breaking new ground every day to bring you the finest material possible. We've partnered with such clients as MoreLikeRadio.com, AntiFanboy.com, and Joystick Jerks, the podcast. So check out all of that and more on CutprintFilm.com. And remember, have a CutPrint Film day.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone.
Yeah, and she's Jeff's been gone too, gone too long. And now Chris anytime is back. She says some words.
Oh, I'm on the spot right now. Welcome back, everyone.
Dave knows.
What does he know?
I don't approve of any of this. I don't like this at all. I don't like the direction we're going in.
Welcome back, everyone.
I'm visibly displeased.
We're talking about Gone Girl. All
right. Yeah, we are talking about it.
Yeah, what do you want to talk about?
Let's get into the characters.
Before we...
And the actors that play them.
All right.
Kim Dickens from Tremé.
Yes.
That's what I know her from. You guys know her from...
I know her from Deadwood, right. Yeah.
And Hollow Man.
Who did she play on Deadwood?
She was the Wood. She's killed in the first episode.
She's one of the many prostitutes on the show.
And she's excellent.
She is good. And she's excellent in this.
She's great on Tremé. One of my favorite parts of the show.
Yeah.
But she... I don't want to say I can't picture anyone else in that role, but I wouldn't want to. You know what I mean? She does such a great job.
She does an excellent job.
She plays Detective Rhonda Boney, which is also a great name.
Yeah, and honestly, this is what I pictured this character as looking at and talking like her voice.
Right.
This casting from top to bottom is perfect.
It's a great character. Basically, she's sort of like the one law enforcement official who sort of thinks Nick is innocent because she thinks all these clues are just way too convenient, and she's like the only one who picks up on that.
Yeah, she's also the only one that is doing any police work whatsoever.
Right,
so that helps.
Yeah, the scene where she's like, it's just kind of weird for a girl to go missing who leaves clues around.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
And I really like the scene where they're reading her diary,
right,
journal, whatever it is. And the last line is like, I feel my husband may kill me. Ben Affleck's like, this is a bit of a convenient last note to leave it on.
Just the fact that they shed light on that.
Yeah. It was a funny movie.
Oh, this movie is a lot of funniness. There's so much funny stuff in this movie, which we'll get to, I guess, after the characters.
Yeah.
But she was great. I can't pull out specific parts of the film that I loved with her just because she fit right in.
It's just her overall performance. One thing I really loved in the movie is there's a part in the book, and it's in the movie too, where they ask Nick if he knows what Amy's blood type is, and he doesn't.
Oh, yeah.
And the book, it's told from first person from both Nick and Amy, so you don't get to see any other characters' thought processes. So when I read the book, I was like, oh, shit, I don't know my wife's blood type. I seem like a lunatic. And the movie does this it's almost like cute the way it does it, where after they ask Nick this question, he leaves the room, but it stays with Boney, and Gilpin is the other detective, played by Patrick Fugit. And he says, "Should I know my wife's blood type?" And she's like, "Fuck no." And I thought that was I thought that was great. That was like a great, because like when
and
I read
the look she gives, I'm like, "Are you some kind of asshole?"
Yeah. So it's just it's a great just the way she plays the character where she thinks there's something wrong with him, but she doesn't think he's a murderer.
She knows something's weird, but
she totally just nails that character. Just that sort of like she's basically smarter than everyone else in the mm-hmm. movie.
She actually does great in the scene where she lays out the case to Nick in right. the in the you know yeah. in their house,
and she's walking around putting post-its on.
Oh no, I'm saying the later scene where she gives him the credit card, and she right. does the thing where she jumps in the living room, and the frames fall over.
Yeah. And then there's that part at the end where after Amy has come back. And there's then a room where it's all FBI agents, and then it's her. And all the FBI agents are just eating up Amy's story, and she keeps trying to shoot it down. And the FBI agents are like, "You need to fuck it." They just give her looks, like, yeah. "Stop it. Stop, like,
stop being a policeman."
Yeah, and it's just a great character. It's just well-written, well-acted.
The other female supporting actress was Carrie Coon from The Leftovers.
Yeah, she is fantastic.
I don't watch Leftovers, so I've never seen her or anything, and she's really good in this.
She's the best part of The Leftovers. And there's actually an episode that's they do a thing like Lost where they kind of follow a single character through mm-hmm. The season. There's an episode that's two episodes that are completely devoted to her, and they are the best episodes okay. in the show because her yeah. character's brutal and she's just an amazing actress.
She gives such a strong performance in, I mean, she has a lot to do
right.
in the book as well as the movie, but she just delivers every scene. It's she's so good at showing emotion. Like she emotes. It's so believable.
I was impressed because like when I cast things in my book, I tend to cast people I know. So if I were casting this movie, I would never cast this actress. I'm like, who the fuck is that?
Yeah, you would have cast Bill Cosby.
Exactly. Yeah, all roles all the time. But I was just really impressed. Like
Chris loves pudding, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. What's her name in the film again?
Margot.
Oh, yeah.
But they call her Go for short.
Because she gets her finger cut off in that one scene, right?
No.
And then she kisses Ben Affleck?
No,
I think you're mistaken.
I think your brain fever has returned.
Dave has boiling water on the brain.
That was a Margot Tenenbaum joke.
Mm. No, we got it. We weren't going along.
We're giving it back to you.
Yeah.
No CODs.
Did you keep the receipt for that joke?
Okay. They might not be as quick as you two.
Well, they've tuned out already.
Yeah, they've long since gone to bed.
So yeah, Carrie Coon is excellent.
Excellent. I want to see more of her now.
Yeah, and I don't watch The Leftovers either, so I had never seen her face ever before, and I was just she struck me.
Right.
As I was trying to figure out, how have I not seen this person before? She's so good.
Yeah, she's very good.
The scene where Ben Affleck's at the airport and it's on the TV, and the guy's like, "It's twin sex."
Yeah.
And he just like
Ben Affleck puts his hat on in disgust.
His straight brim hat. It looks so natural. Yeah. This is my trusty lucky hat I've had for years. Really? Why is it perfectly straight brimmed?
So we mentioned Tyler Perry earlier, but he's like so slick in this film.
Oh my god! Like
he's a lot of fun.
I want a series of spin-off films about Tanner Bolt where Tyler Perry
He's representing it lunatics.
Yeah, he's just like, he just picks, like, or like a TV series, like Better Call Saul, but with Tyler Perry as Tanner Bolt, where he just represents a different lunatic every week. I think I speak for everyone on this show where I say, we don't like Tyler Perry in general.
Not even his acting, because I've never seen a Tyler Perry film before this.
The brand of Tyler Perry.
Yeah, I don't like his public persona.
Right, he's...
He's misogynistic.
He does not like women. His movies are overtly like, the goal of the women in his movies is just to get a man.
Yeah, I don't like that at all.
And it's like, no, thank you.
But that said, God, does he eat this role up. Oh, he's so much fun to watch. Yes.
Like, I wanted more scenes with him just because he's so much fun to watch. And this
could have easily devolved into the South Park Johnny Cochran type right. character where he's just a caricature. But no, this is a fully realized character that has purpose to what he's doing. And he's got a life outside of the story going on. It's awesome.
I actually got excited because I thought we were going to a courtroom scenario.
And that would have been perfectly fine. Awesome. That would have been perfectly fine.
Like, this almost makes me angry that Tyler Perry is wasting his time making his bullshit Look at me, I'm a woman.
Making his billions of dollars.
Yeah, making his billions of dollars with his terrible...
His empire of trash.
Like, people should just start, putting him in other movies, because he's actually a good actor.
I would
love
to see him put in more... He probably will be now. Pictures.
Like, real movies, yeah. Not his nonsense. Because it's a great, slick lawyer character. It's fun. It's funny. That the theater I saw it with, at the ending, where Nick is explaining everything, Tyler Perry says, "You two are the most fucked up people I've ever met." And the theater I was in, erupted in laugh. It was, the biggest laugh of the whole movie. And it's delivered perfectly the way
and
he does
it. And in that scene, I knew he was departing the film
right.
at that point, and I got bummed out.
Yeah, oh, I'm going to miss him.
Yeah,
yeah,
generally, I would say Patrick Fugit is supposed to be the cipher for the audience,
right.
I think, through this whole thing. But in that one scene... Tyler Perry gets to be the audience cipher by saying, "You two are the most fucked up people I've ever known."
And he says, "And I make a living representing fucked up people." And
I think just that line alone is that's a throwing a bone to the audience, saying, "Yes, we realize
how insane all of this
nuts.
Is."
I felt more connected to Kim Dickens because she's trying to figure out she's trying to figure out the mystery of it.
I would say just the cops in general are who we're supposed to. They're the normal people.
Yeah,
you're 5-0.
Yeah.
Are you wearing a wire?
Well,
are there bodies on these whatever?
Well, you are calling back to episode one,
which
I think.
We deleted, so no one will get the reference.
Who else is in this film?
Neil Patrick Harris.
Yeah. Yes, playing Doogie Howser, MD, surprisingly.
Playing Hedwig and the Hangry Inch.
He's only in four scenes
in
the whole film.
Much.
But it gets the character. The character is, there's more to all these characters in the book, but this character... He's a lot creepier in the book. There's a part in the book where we learn when Amy and this character, his name is Desi, were dating. She used to love a particular flower. So even though Desi and Amy haven't seen each other in years, in his mansion he has a room where he just grows this flower that he's been growing it for all these years.
Oh, that is fucking creepy.
Yeah. So there's a lot more
to that. That's like Dragon Tattoo with the pictures that they send.
In the book, he's a lot more... You get the point that he's a creep. And I kind of like that they sort of cut that because it makes his death scene a lot more oh my God, this is shot. But we'll get to that. I don't want to just jump to the death
scene. As a non-book reader, an Unsullied, as we're called in the Game of Thrones universe, I got to say his character was slightly confusing.
Really?
Narratively.
Okay.
Because you're like, who is this fucking guy?
He does come from left field.
Yeah. The book sets him up more as he's obsessed with Amy.
And I couldn't tell, is Amy obsessed with him a little bit, or what's the dynamic, their relationship dynamic is never clearly explained.
Like Chris said, it is in the book. It's laid out for you perfectly.
Yeah. I figured that it was just, it got left on the floor.
I agree. That is one of the weaker things in the movie, that they sort of cut that character's motivations down just a little bit. Basically, the movie is just he just wants to get laid. That's sort of how the character feels in the movie.
Yeah.
Whereas in the book, he's obsessed with her.
Yeah.
But aren't there more books that follow?
Well, there's many more books than Gone Girl.
Yeah, there's
millions of them.
And there will be forever and ever.
I thought that there were more Gone Girl books.
No.
You sure?
Yeah, yeah, I'm 100% positive.
Sure, you guys?
There's Gone Gal.
Oh, that's what I'm thinking of. I'm thinking about Gal with the Wind. Okay.
Well, I think we ought to just nip this in the bud.
That was the worst joke ever, so let's move on. But yeah, it's a...
All right.
Neil Patrick, but he's good in what he has to do.
He's fucking creepy.
Right.
Oh, is he ever. He is a creep, and he makes me uncomfortable every time they're on screen together.
Yeah.
And he's very possessive. Like the scenes where they're watching the interview together.
Right.
And
turns the TV off.
He takes the fucking pudding from her, or whatever the hell that was.
Yeah, the creme brulee.
Really aggressively,
to hide out, Amy has changed her appearance. She's gained some weight. She's dyed her hair. And he basically, once she starts to live with him, he's like, "Oh, here, dye your hair back and start exercising, because I don't want you to look like this."
But even, I mean, to take someone in who's missing and their husband is being accused of murder,
he's
he's a weirdo.
Yeah, he's perfectly fine with Nick maybe getting the death penalty. He does not care at all. So, I mean, that alone says that there's something not right with this character.
So
let's talk about that death scene.
Yeah, so... The movie in general has an overwhelming feeling of dread to it, but this scene, even to someone like me who's used to just gore on film,
puts a point right on it.
Well, the calculated brutality of it,
it's just
with the wine bottle.
Ugh.
That was a rough scene.
This whole build up to this scene. Basically, Amy, once she realizes Nick can change in her mind, she's like, oh, I'll just go back to Nick, because she doesn't want to live with possessive Desi anymore. Yeah. So she calculates this routine to set it up so that Desi has been raping her, and she basically rapes herself with a wine bottle, which they show in the film, which I wasn't expecting.
It's so uncomfortable.
It is. And it's not even that she's doing it, it's that she does it with just this cold detachment that makes it so unsettling.
And we'll get into that right. When we get to her.
At this point in the film, her motivation seems like she's just trying to figure out a way to get out of her bind.
Right.
And not, I didn't think she was going back to Nick.
No, well, that she is, though.
Yeah.
Do you mean you didn't realize that?
Yeah, I didn't realize that. Yeah. It just seems like she's like, fuck, I gotta go away from this guy now.
Okay.
I thought she was just gonna like take money and get the fuck out of there and go back to the plant.
So, yeah, so, like Chris says, she rapes herself with the bottle of wine.
She ties like twine around her wrist to make it look like she's been tied up, and then she, you know, she gets Desi into bed. She's really aggressive because she just wants to get it over with. And she cuts his...
Which, that speaks to, like, her how psychotic she is. Like, she's not doing it... She's doing it clumsily. She's like, all right, let's fuck.
Like, I want to get this over with, basically. And she cuts his throat while he's he's on top.
He's so, climaxing.
Yeah, and he bleeds all over her. It's insane.
Disgusting. It's a putrid scene.
She's covered in blood.
Covered in it.
And he tries to pull away, and she wraps her legs around, and then she flips him over, and they're still fucking while he's bleeding everywhere. It's a brutal, like,
and it's far worse in the film than it is in the book.
Yeah, because the book is just like, she just says, like, I cut his throat. But the movie, I could feel how uncomfortable everyone, because it was a packed theater.
And that's the second twist.
Right.
The first twist is that Amy's alive. And that I can see people being like, oh, that makes sense. But this one,
she's a crazy
person. Because like the movie sets up, oh, she's more or less a sociopath. But you don't get that, oh, she's going to kill someone. And then she just kills him.
And it's violent. The violence of this is insane.
Right.
So that said, let's talk about Rosamund Pike.
Okay, I just wanted to say that that scene, the last time I'd felt like that in a theater was Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Okay.
And it speaks to how good Fincher is at these scenes, these brutal fucking scenes.
Well, Fight Club, all the violence in that is fantastic.
Yeah.
He has a unique way of presenting violence where it's not gratuitous. It's just the way it's like this detached sort of, he's just there. It's like realistic, but it's not. It's like realistic and dreamlike at the same time. Mm-hmm. It's kind of weird. I
can't explain it either.
Yeah, it's a unique thing he does.
Okay, so you wanted to get to Rosamund Pike and how
she is the MVP absolutely of Gone Girl.
As good as Affleck is in this film,
and we'll get to him.
She is superb.
Yeah, if she does not get an Oscar nomination for this, I will eat my hat, as they say.
Well, why don't you take my hat off my head and shit in it?
I'll do that, but then. That'll be later, after I eat mine.
So yeah, they went with Rosamund Pike, and I had only seen her once before previously in Jack Reacher, in which she plays, as Chris put it, confused lawyer.
Yeah, she plays a lawyer in that who apparently doesn't understand how law works. So I'd seen her in that. I also saw her, she's in The World's End, where she's okay in that, but
I can never remember her in that.
She's token girl in that.
Yeah.
So, and I like that movie, but she never really stood out in anything before, so...
But yeah, this is another brave choice.
Yeah, like when sort of the same thing with Carrie Coon, where when they cast her, I was like, why would they cast her?
Who is this?
Yeah, and man, did they pick the right choice.
This is such a performance, and she has such presence and a look about her.
I've seen a lot of people say this, and I agree wholeheartedly, that she totally fits that, like, Hitchcock blonde moment. Like,
she has these small...
Especially with the short hair.
Yeah.
Small pitch black eyes.
Right.
Where they're like a doll's eyes.
All over white.
There's nothing behind... You can't see any emotion in this woman. And that's her look.
Right.
She definitely... She looked this way in Jack Reacher. I just thought, wow, that's an odd-looking actress. She just has this...
She has a unique, physical appearance.
Yeah, very unique. But my God, does it fit this character perfectly.
And one thing I think what says the most about her performance is, even after all the shitty, evil stuff she does, I still liked her. And, like, I didn't get that in the book as much. I was sort of like...
No, you hate her in the
book.
Like,
what a twisted character. But in the movie, she does such a good job with this character that, like there's a scene where she's watching a TV interview with Nick, and she's sitting with I forget the character's name, when she's in that, the hillbilly girl.
Yeah.
And the hillbilly girl says... says something mean about her, and so she spits in her drink, and it's such a funny character moment. And it's like, it made me like that character, even though she's a detestable character.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is just in her performance, just the way she plays the character.
She played it a lot like Claire Underwood in House of Cards.
A little bit.
Towards the end.
Not as robotic, yeah. Because Claire Underwood is a fembot from the Austin Powers series.
I don't really like Claire Underwood in House of Cards. I feel like she's too
detached. I do like Robin Wright. So.
I like her as an actress, but the character, I think, is kind of weak.
All the characters are weak in that show. But
except Kevin Spacey.
That's a different conversation.
But I'm just saying I saw a similarity in her character when she's giving the interviews post coming back to Nick.
Right.
That's when I saw that. But she's so great at like the fake Louisiana accent and playing that character. I was surprised she could do that.
Yeah.
Because everything I've seen her in, she's been like the Amy Dunn, you know.
Just and on top of all that, she's in real life, she's English. So that makes her there's a lot of actresses and actors who are British. You can pick up like, oh, they're British. But even though I knew she was
Dominic
British,
West from The Wire,
right?
He sounds like an Englishman trying to do an American accent.
And like I said, like in The World's End, she's clearly British, and I knew that. But even watching this, like she just seems naturally American. It's such a good. I can't.
It's nuanced, but it's just everything about this character. She nails.
I think this is one of the best representations of like a sociopath I've ever seen on film.
Yeah.
Like I read a lot about sociopaths because I'm fucking unwell, I guess.
Yes.
But like watching this, a lot of times in movies and TV shows they play sociopaths sort of wrong. They're sort of like over the top evil manner, and she plays it perfectly. It sort of matches that the way Christian Bale plays Patrick Bateman in American Psycho. It's that sort of performance where it's
like nonchalant.
Yeah, it's like it's like they don't give it like. Sociopaths, they don't have...
They never deviate from the plan.
Yeah, they don't have, like, normal emotions, so they don't act like people being evil. They're just like, I don't understand why you're... they do something, and they don't understand why you're reacting in a certain way.
Specifically the scene where Ben Affleck slams her head against the wall.
Which, I want to talk about that, but go on.
And then she says something like, this is who you married. Like, you wanted this.
So, let me just say about that. I think that scene is brilliant because it brings everything back, because I think without that scene, the film would just be stacked too much towards Affleck's character. You'd be forgiving of everything he does. And I'm not saying Affleck's character deserves to go through all he goes through, but I think that scene where he slams her against the wall and he's like, you fucking cunt. He's like, it reminds you that, oh, he's an asshole too.
Yeah, these are all horrible people.
But
like, I feel like without that scene, you'd sort of been like, oh, Ben Affleck is a nice guy. But no, he's still a dick. And I love the way that scene brought it back and reminded you that, oh, no, he sucks too.
Well, Nick Dunn never actually, like, abused her.
No.
That was part of the fairy tale.
Not physically.
Tale, right? Okay.
Not physically, but he was cheating on her.
Yeah, he was having an almost 2-year affair with a 20-year-old student.
And he moved her out into the middle of the country.
Right.
Yeah, he was completely selfish.
Yeah,
he's
an emotionally abusive husband.
There's a lot more of that in the book, because it's from his point of view, you see that he's much more of an asshole than in the movie. I will say the movie sort of let him off just a little bit.
The book also, you spend a lot more time with both of his parents, both of her parents, Desi.
Yeah, there's a lot more in the book about his dad, and his dad is this huge misogynistic character. And
Fincher used that very well as a red herring, because
in the
one scene, it made Affleck look bad, and it made the father look suspect.
Yeah.
When they're in the police station, the father shows up, and up to this point, Affleck hasn't, or Nick Dunn, hasn't emotionally reacted at all to his wife being missing.
Yeah.
And he sees his father in the police station and within split seconds is like freaking the fuck out.
Right. Yeah.
Like, why is my fucking dad here? Like, and it was like, oh, wait, something's off with this dynamic.
Right.
But it was just a red herring, obviously.
So we're saying a lot about Affleck. Is there anything more about Rosamund Pike other than, like, it feels like silly because, like, I've never tasted
pike before. Yeah. But, I mean, I've had river trout.
Well,
we're doing fish jokes.
You're talking about the Codcast, which we do after this.
Oh, fuck. I thought we started that.
So, it's like, there's only so much you can say, but you just lump it in as she's fantastic. It's
Yeah.
Like, I can't rave about this performance enough. Like I'm totally blown away by this performance.
As am I.
Yeah.
Here, let me wipe my two fingers on your lip.
Oh,
real
thanks.
Quick.
So, well, that brings us to the other stellar performance in the film, and that is Ben Affleck.
Yes, playing Bruce Wayne.
That was the one thing, the fingers on the lips, that was weird.
A little forced,
yeah,
a little creepy.
It felt out of place.
Unrealistic. I've never done that to a woman.
Because you got the fingers on the chin,
well,
and then the...
have you ever kissed a woman in a sugar cloud before?
Never.
Well.
I don't think sugar clouds are real.
I've never kissed a woman in a sugar cloud scored by Trent Reznor.
Have you ever kissed a girl while listening to Sugar Cult, the band?
No. No, I haven't.
Have you ever seen a champagne supernova?
I have.
Well,
anyway,
guys,
you got any more good questions to ask me?
All right. Well, here's a real question. So, would you guys agree that this is Ben Affleck's best performance?
Yes.
Yep.
Absolutely.
And in a career of good performances.
Yeah, I don't think he's a bad actor. He's had a string of bad movies, which thankfully he's more or less out of.
Yes, we've discussed them. Geely, yes. Jersey Girl.
Gobble, gobble. Yeah.
But he's phenomenal in this movie.
He's great in The Town. He was decent in Argo.
This, I think he's so good in this because this is a character he was more or less born to play.
Yeah.
Like, in the book, he's described as this, like, puffy Irish guy with... And it literally says this. He's, like, a puffy Irish guy with a face you want to punch.
And
even the book, they say his character has a cleft chin, and that's... It's the him. That's what Ben Affleck looks like.
This... if I've ever seen an actor with a face I'd like to punch,
right.
He's the one. He's the one.
Right. And I like Ben Affleck. He just has that sort of face where just like, fuck you.
Yeah.
So again, not knowing where the story was going, at first I felt like he was playing the character wrong because he's not reacting to the crime scene at all. I'm like, what is happening here? I was like, did he actually murder? Because I'm like,
no.
That would be too simple of a...
No, he just knows that his wife is up to her bullshit again.
He's just like, oh, this fucking bitch again is doing something crazy. But when the cops show up, he's just sitting on the kitchen counter, like,
yeah, just ready to help.
Hey, come on in.
Hey, come on. Here it is.
And I was like, all right, this is really off. Is Affleck just out on the moon? but as the character progresses.
And then once the clues start, like once Amy's planted clues start coming, you get the feeling like, oh, he's used to these games.
But even specifically the scenes where like he had to pose in front of the picture. Like
That's a big, big scene in the book.
Yeah.
Where he poses in front of her
and
missing
he
picture.
Smiles and like smiles. A douchebag.
And it plays in the film exactly as I saw it in my mind when I was reading it. It was perfect.
It was that perfect sort of like, I don't realize I'm smiling, but I'm smiling.
His sister sees him do it and just
like
puts her head in her hand.
But it put this dread in my stomach of how easily you could be...
Yes.
Turned into someone you're not.
Because I could see myself doing that.
I'm a socially awkward person, so if I was put on that stage, I would look like a murderer instantly.
Like, God forbid, if anything ever happened to my wife, everyone would be like, Chris probably did it, because I am the most... I have zero social skills, so I would not know what the fuck to do, and everyone would just be like, what is wrong with him? Like... And that's sort of like that's sort of the big thing with the book and the movie. It's just that theme of how easily you're just going to suspect if something happens to a woman in a married couple, you're going to suspect the husband probably did it because 9 times out of 10, it is true the husband did it. And that's sort of the big thing with her book is that like look at how easily you could believe that and how easily that could happen if
because you become a celebrity for the
and
wrong
that's
reason.
That's why I like that at the midway point they reveal no, he did not do it.
Right.
So you're not. You're not hung up on that.
Right.
So now you're watching, all right, what is going on
here?
Well,
there's that great scene where he is up in front of the town and he's like, look, I didn't kill my wife.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things he does in this movie that I love. Like, when he does his big interview with Sharon Schreiber, played by Celia Ward, I love that because he's acting specifically for Amy.
Yeah, only for Amy.
And he totally nails that interview where he's trying to be likable. But he's clearly directing it right, and like, he's like, you could say I taken myself to the woodshed over, and just that's so fucking like that line isn't in the book, and that's so like wink wink. I was like, oh, I love that, and in the flashback scenes where a lot of the flashback scenes they didn't actually happen. It's Amy making them up for her diary.
Yeah,
and there's a part which totally nails that boring suburban marriage where. Basically, he's having sex with Amy. He's banging her up against a mirror from behind, And he just walks away. As he walks away, he calls back over his shoulder, "We should go to Outback Steakhouse later." And she's just like, "Yeah, okay." And that just, that yeah, perfectly.
I laughed out loud.
I burst scene. Into laughter in that.
I love the scene where right before the interview, he's like, "Oh, give me that watch." And he puts it on. She's like, you hate that watch. Yeah. He's like, "No, I don't. I love this watch.
Yeah.
And he's I love this tie.
I love my watch." It's I mean,
it was like such a great scene.
It's such like a smart ass character that.
But there was another moment that fit how the audience feels about Nick Dunn when he's like, "One minute they love me," or he's like, "First they disliked me, then they liked me,
yeah.
then they hated me, now they love me." Yeah. And if it's how you feel about him in yeah. the movie, you it's, keep yeah. going back and forth.
And there's that moment where right before the interview, all the makeup girls are putting makeup on him, and you can just see they hate his yeah. fucking guts because the interview happens right after you find out he's been having an affair. Like the public finds out.
Yeah, you could see she's like pressing extra hard yeah. on his face.
And he says, "Thank you." And she like rolls her eyes at him. And it's, yeah.
Flynn and Fincher did a great job of showing how the media can just take story and twist it and manipulate it as it sees fit.
Yeah, there's a character in the movie
to tell a narrative on their own.
There's a character in the movie named Ellen Abbott, who's clearly based on Nancy Grace, who is a terrible human being.
Yes. Pure garbage in a human suit.
Yeah. Nancy Grace is so terrible that, I forget that woman's name, but when that woman murdered her child and got away with it.
Casey Anthony?
Yeah, people felt bad for Casey Anthony because Nancy Grace was such a pain in the ass about yeah. the trial.
Good work, yeah. we're saying.
Thanks.
Keep it up.
It did a great job bringing in those like real world elements yeah. and caricaturing them
yeah.
without
taking it out of the movie and making it being yeah. a cartoon character.
It's referencing without parodying.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with Tyler Perry's character. Like he's every hotshot slick lawyer yeah. you've seen on TV while being his own real character.
Yeah.
It kind of felt like Blue Ruin at times to me. Did you guys get that at all?
I did not.
The exterior shots and the things like that, there was like a very quiet calm to the
movie.
Always. Yeah. I would agree with that, yeah.
Just because I've seen that this year, it's like the first
right.
reference point I have to go back to. But
yeah, this is a very quiet, toned-down movie as yeah. far as even the soundtrack, which is superb.
Right? Yeah.
But it's quiet and it's unsettling in its muted tones. It's really, really good.
Was the soundtrack overly bassy? I had one of those fucking theaters where Transformers is happening next door, so
if you're like, watching this in Dolby surround yeah. sound,
there was one did you guys I don't know if it was like the mix in my theater or what, but the scene where Nick and Amy meet at a party,
too low.
Oh, it was too low. It was too the low. Opening scene,
and a part of me wondered if Fincher did that on purpose just to be like, oh, this is what it sounds like when you're at a party, or if it was just bad mixing.
Well, he did that with the opening scene of The Social Network. You like, have the I same
thought,
trouble.
I thought that's what he was going for, but it sort of distracted me where I was like, I don't know what the fuck they're saying.
I noticed the same thing.
So yeah, I couldn't.
I thought that was just the theater I was
in. Yeah, I don't know if it's a theater or just Fincher is doing that to just, oh, you're at a party, it sounds like this.
I started getting the red sweats, like when you're like, am I going to have to fucking watch this whole movie?
I did too. I was like, am I going to have to make my wife go out to the lobby because I won't do it because I'm afraid of people?
Go tell them to turn it up.
Like, I've been at movies where, like, they forget to turn the lights out, and I'll be like, can you go tell them because I'm afraid to confront people that the lights are still on?
That's interesting that we all had that yeah. same feeling.
So, three different
theaters. It had to be intentional.
I guess, yeah, I guess so, yeah. So one thing I want to ask you guys, a lot of people have accused Gillian Flynn of the book being misogynistic. And what do you guys think that's true or not?
No, I don't.
I don't either.
I will say the scene with Scoop McNairy where he talks about the staged rape.
I think the big thing people point out as being misogynistic, and I love the way they did it in the movie, is where Amy is explaining types of girls and the way they act. Like, she's giving that speech about the cool girl.
Oh, yeah. And the way Fincher, she's driving by the cars.
The way Fincher does that, where she's driving and every car she drives by is a different type of girl, which I fucking loved.
That was
the way
a clever way to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think when people say there is a misogynistic book, I think they're missing the point of the character.
I think that's the thing. you're reading this through the lens of a psychopath.
Yeah, right, this is not supposed to be telling it like it is. Right. This person is a lunatic.
Yeah, Amy is not a mentally well character. So to be like, oh, she's misogynistic, like, well, maybe she is. It doesn't mean the book agrees with her personality.
Yeah, I don't get that. That's Flynn or Fincher telling us that yes, this is how the world is. I don't buy that for a second.
I was reading an interview with Gillian Flynn. She was saying a lot of people think like, oh, it's misogynistic to make this book about this female character who's a crazy bitch, quote unquote. And she was saying it's more misogynistic to just assume all women are just pure and perfect. Like that's how she sees it, and that's how I would agree. I mean, I think it's short-sighted to be like, oh, there's a crazy woman in this movie. This is a misogynistic movie.
It's also utter horseshit to limit the type of fiction we can have.
Yeah.
No, you're not allowed to have misogynistic characters, especially if they're women.
Yeah.
That's nonsense.
That's what, like the scene with where Scoot McNairy's character is explaining the staged rape, how she tied herself up, or she bought it. It was all calculated. It's kind of the first time she ever did something crazy like this.
Right.
It's an important moment in the book. But part of me was like, oh, people are going to try to take this scene out of context.
Yeah, I agree with that. I feel like a lot of like bros, quote unquote, are going to watch this movie and they're going to be like, that bitch is crazy. And it's like, you're missing the point of this story.
Well, because like you were saying that this movie is slightly weighted towards Affleck.
Right.
His character is an asshole. He's cheating on his wife. Yeah. He's having sex with his college students, which is one of the most despicable things you can do.
Yeah, I'm worried people are going to get the wrong message for this. I'm worried people are going to be like, oh, Affleck was right to do everything he did because his wife was crazy.
Yeah,
and
no,
like, that's not the point.
They're both, they need each other. And that is the point.
That's
of the
ending.
That's why that ending is so perfect.
They need each other.
It's also the opening scene.
Yeah. It's the fact that these two people are just, they're broken. Not normal
they're
people.
They're broken people.
I just liked
and
that.
And they deserve one another. Literally. That is the message. These people deserve one another.
The opening scene is her head on his lap,
right,
and she looks up at him, and it's sweet.
Yeah.
And then at the end, she looks up at him, and you have a totally different, but it's the same exact scene. That was awesome.
Yeah. So I can assume that we hated this movie.
Yeah. What a bad movie.
You gave it an 8.
Yeah.
It's difficult, because to me, this is like an 8.5.
I kind of would give this a 9. I would not. But
I was bordering 8. Eight or nine. And
Jeff's the toughest grader out of us.
I think I am.
But the amount of time I spent thinking about this movie after I saw it was what impressed me the most, because it was so pulpy, and yet there were still things that stuck with me later on.
And that can be said about the book as well.
I'm going to have to read it.
The fact that it's pulpy but so smart is what makes me want to give it a 9 if I were reviewing it. But I loved your review, so...
Yeah, your review was great.
I can't say... Jeff, please, let us compliment you some more.
Let's read it aloud.
I gave it an 8 because there were things I didn't like. I didn't like the narrations, a lot of it. I know it was kind of unavoidable,
right,
because that's how it is in the book. I kind of didn't love it.
I'm glad they didn't give Affleck narrate. He gets it in the beginning, and that's it.
Yeah.
Because obviously, like I've said like 10 times already in my drunken ramblings, the book is told from both their point of view, so you get voiceovers, quote unquote, from both of them. So
yeah.
I'm glad they didn't give him a lot.
I had a problem with that, and...
One thing I didn't like, because I didn't like it in the book, too, is I don't like those two characters she shacks up with who steal her money.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
I was kind of hoping she would cut that.
It's worse in the book.
Yeah, they're more prominent in the book. So I was hoping they would get cut.
But you kind of,
you need it for her to lose the money, but I don't give a shit. So maybe that would knock it down to an 8.
But it also cheapens it a little bit that her main motivation is money. Like,
well, she needs to just survive, basically.
I didn't like, I'd like the fact that they streamlined some of the characters out, but I didn't think that it was, you know, expertise filmmaking to leave his father and Nick's, girlfriend flapping in the breeze.
Yeah.
Even his sister kind of is just left hanging at the end. And I know this is about Nick and Amy primarily, but these characters are just... Oh, we're done with you.
Yeah,
that's really why I gave it an 8.
I was most shocked that they cut down the father so much, because the father, while not a big character, he's a big point. one of the reasons Nick wants to stay at the end is because his father walked out on him, and he's like, oh, I don't want to abandon my child. And they don't really...
I abandoned my boy!
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you.
And, like, the father appears in one scene.
He gets one scene. Yeah.
Like, a part of me thought, like, why didn't they just cut that character entirely? Because if you're going to put it in the film, it should lead to something, and it really doesn't. And, like, in the book, the father dies, and there's a lot more to it. So.
Right, and because I didn't like that in the book... I'm glad it wasn't in the movie, but like you said, why introduce his father at all?
Why have him at all?
Yeah. I mean, aside from the red herring, but
well, if you're going to introduce him, maybe give him more than one scene.
Yeah.
I don't know. And so, the same thing with his girlfriend.
Right.
She factors in much more.
She's
in
very
the book.
Just a non-entity, but
much,
at the same time
much.
As a character point for Nick to show why she Amy Dunn has gone crazy.
Right.
I felt like I liked the sister, and I wish there had been more of her.
Yeah,
what,
there is. In the
do
book.
They explain what like her? Because there's that brutal scene right towards the end where she's like laying on her kitchen floor. Right.
That's in the book too. That scene, yeah.
And that's the last time you hear from her.
Yeah, that's more or less the last. The ending is pretty much the same as the book ending,
which some people will find unsatisfying.
Right.
Definitely. I didn't really like the ending in the book,
but it worked.
I loved it in the movie.
Yeah, it works really well in the movie. It's a little...
I think you needed a visual element, really, because in the book I was like, I don't buy this shit. I'm not buying it.
Did they put out, initially, we're rewriting the ending?
There was a thing where Fincher was saying, and Gillian Flynn was saying, to keep it more of a twist, the ending has changed, but it really hasn't, so I don't know why they said that.
They probably just said it so people would go see it and not spoil the ending to their friends.
Yeah, probably.
So, all right.
Gone Girl is fantastic.
Yeah.
Go see it if you haven't, and if you've listened to this and you haven't, sorry, we ruined the whole movie for you.
Yeah, so why did you listen to this whole podcast? We told you in the beginning, there's spoilers, you knucklehead.
Maybe you too are a sociopath.
Oh, before we move on.
I can feel cup and fail weekly. Coming, oh Lord, and I've been watching these cut-print film movies for all my life, oh Lord, oh Lord. And I've been waiting for
these movies. Well, at least it's not long.
Listening to that is the equivalent of like seeing someone bomb on stage, and you're just like, you get really hot, like, oh, I feel bad for them.
Ooh,
it's still going.
That was special.
I made it nice and short.
Yeah, no, I like it tight and concise.
Yeah, all our songs should be 10 minutes long.
A full measure of a song. I like it.
Well, I'm gonna go first.
Okay,
is it my turn?
Go for it.
It's always your turn.
I'm gonna mention a movie that Chris mentioned earlier.
Oh.
Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
I quit.
Interesting.
A great David Fincher piece that is often overlooked.
Dave, you said horseshit wrong. You said great.
You mispronounced horseshit.
Yeah, you mispronounced horseshit as great.
Chris has an issue with this film. I will agree that I hate the Katrina framing device, and then I hate the broken clock framing device, the clock that turns backwards. But once it starts with the actual Benjamin Button story, it is a great film.
You know what else I hate is everything else in the movie.
I feel this is a better American adventure piece than Big Fish or Forrest Gump. This actually...
Yeah, you guys...
I won't argue that this is better than Forrest Gump, but it's also the same exact story as Forrest Gump, so no thanks.
It's backwards, Chris.
Oh, well then, that fucking changes everything.
What's her name is great in this. I'm blanking. Cate Blanchett. Yeah.
All right. Look, Cate Blanchett is very good in this, but she's very good in everything.
She's very, very good in this. Brad Pitt is very good in this. It's one of my favorite Brad Pitt movies.
I like this movie a lot.
And
so you're both stupid.
We're right. Mushheads.
Oh, sorry, I won't interrupt anymore.
My head is soft.
I've met a lot of people who don't like this movie, so you're not the only one.
Yeah, because you've met a lot of normal people.
But the big thing about this movie is it's fucking beautiful. It is my favorite David Fincher movie just to look at.
I agree
with
that.
Some of the scenes are just... And it goes in different environments that Fincher films don't normally go to, like the tropics and Russia, and you get to see all these different places.
Right.
David Fincher has that typical lighting where it's like a fucking bed lamp.
Yeah.
And that's lighting the whole...
It's those IKEA ball lights.
So to be able to see the beach and just how beautifully he does it, there's a scene where Brad Pitt comes up out of the water and kind of shakes his hair off, and I'm like, fuck, that looks like Clark Gable. Like, it feels old-timey, and it's supposed
to. That's what I like about it. It looks classic. This film looks classic to
me. I mean, I won't argue that it looks good, but you can have the best photographer in the world using the best camera in the world take a photo of a pile of horse shit, and it's still going to be horse shit.
I don't know. It could be a beautiful picture of horse shit.
Doesn't change the fact that it came out of a horse's ass.
Yeah, but and you said you had an issue with the Tilda Swinton plot.
I do, and I love Tilda Swinton, but that whole subplot where they're eating fucking whatever, dinner, I'm like, I don't give a shit.
Yeah. I actually love that part of the movie.
Is that the part where Michael Clayton comes in? I'm sorry.
Forgot about Michael Clayton.
I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, so if you love good movies,
don't watch this.
Check out 2008's Benjamin Button.
What's the full title of that?
The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
I was curious.
Would you please pass the jelly?
What? Excellent.
Who's next?
Hugo.
All right, I'll go.
Hugo, who's that?
Hugo Boss.
Well, like we mentioned in the beginning of the show, it's Shocktober, and I'm going to shock everyone, all you fiends out there.
Is it Wes Craven's Shocker you're recommending?
Is it some kind of monster, the Metallica documentary?
No, it is. No, it's not. My recommendation is a horror movie, 2009's The Loved Ones, directed by Sean Byrne. It's an Australian film. And it's very Australian.
Oh, a lot of dingoes?
No dingoes, no. But Australian films, to me, seem to be very similar in tone to English films, where there's like a silliness to it. And even though this is a horror movie, and let me tell you what, this is a brutal, brutal...
Are there any ghosts in it?
No ghosts.
That's unfortunate. I thought there'd be ghosts.
I'm so scared my shoes just shot off.
Jeff's hair has turned pure white. That sound.
I'm Henry Bowers.
He's fallen to the deadlights.
My chest is gonna cave in.
There's a silliness to it. It uses music effectively to make you laugh. All the music used in this is so dead on. One kid is a depressed guy, so metal's always playing. And it just uses music very effectively for laughs, and that too. But it's a brutal, violent movie. There's a lot of torture in it, and I don't really like torture movies at all, but there's more to this film than just the torture. There's a lot of... It's just a situation that you would never want to be in, and it's horrifying. And the plot is when Brent turns down his classmate Lola's invitation to the prom, she concocts a wildly violent plan for revenge.
Oh, I have heard of this.
And it is violent.
I've sort of avoided seeing it just because it looked like it's just a guy tied to a chair and she's just like drilling him with a drill. Hostile movie.
Even the poster and the cover look stupid.
So yeah, I've sort of avoided it because
it's scary.
Okay.
And coming from a guy that hates torture porn, it's so much more than that.
Do they use the song Lola? She drinks Coke.
As on the nose as that is,
Dave sounded really disappointed about that.
They do use music that is on the nose, and it works.
Like Yakety Sax from the Benny Hill Show.
I really wish they did use that. That's my pick. 2009's The Loved Ones.
Would you please pass the jelly?
I kind of want to just use that from now on. All right, my pick is 2011's Haywire, directed by Steven Soderbergh. Have either of you guys seen this?
No,
that's the one where she's like a spy, right?
So it stars Gina Carano, who's a MMA fighter, which I don't watch, so I don't know anything about. But
I heard she's actually good in this, surprisingly good.
MMA
fighter.
Yeah,
excuse me.
Yeah, she's not a great actress, but she
qualify that.
She kicks so much ass in this movie. Basically, this movie is just like, look at this girl kick everyone's ass. And It actually has a great. It's Michael Fassbender is in it. Antonio Banderas is in it. Michael Douglas is in it. It's a really interesting cast, and it's Steven Soderbergh, who doesn't usually make action movies, so it's not like your typical action movie. But the action is really, really brutal. Like the opening of this film is her character. His name is Mallory Caine. She meets Channing Tatum's character in a diner. And they have this like brief conversation, and then he smashes something on her head, and they have this insane fight where it's I don't know how they filmed it because it looks like Channing Tatum is punching her in the face repeatedly, and maybe he did because she can probably take that because she's tougher than everyone in this room.
She's a fighter,
yeah,
and he's an actor.
Yeah,
is the story compelling enough to warrant watching it?
It's like a generic spy thriller where she just has to go on a mission and go and meet various spies. But
is it better than Salt?
Yeah, it's better than Salt. And Michael Fassbender is really good in it as like a creepy other spy she has to team up with.
Is it better than Pepper?
No. Do you mean the Butthole Surfer song, Pepper? Because nothing's better than
you
that.
You really are the world's biggest asshole.
You're talking to Chris, right?
Yeah.
So clarify.
So yeah, basically she works for the CIA and she gets betrayed. It's sort of like the Bourne Identity, I guess you could say, but with a girl. And she
It sounded interesting. I heard good things when it came out. I just never watched
it.
I
like the trailer.
It's a lot of, it's just fun. It's like a dumb, fun movie.
But I watched Alex Cross instead.
Yeah, good job.
Just kidding. I would never watch
it. And it's fun to watch her beat up all these people.
Is that on anything? Netflix?
It used to be on Netflix. I don't know if it's still there or not. So,
right. 2011. Oh, check that one out.
Haywire. Not to be confused with Hay Fever.
Which is a disease that you should take seriously. Achoo.
Well,
that's about it, folks.
Tune in next week when we review Gone Chris.
No.
I hope not.
Nope.
Where am I going?
The Funny Farm, apparently. Next week, we will be returning to our director series with Roman Polanski's Macbeth.
Yes.
Which I'm very excited to watch.
I am too. Very, very excited.
I've watched it, but I won't spoil anything.
Well, what's the deal with Lady Macbeth's hands?
I can't tell you.
Oh, does she ever get that spot out?
You're going to have to watch.
Do the trees move? Okay. Okay. He's shaking his head.
Oh, no. All right.
But there is a McRib in the film. I don't know if that matters.
Lady McRib is one of my
Lady
favorite
McRib and
characters.
Then Mayor McCheese.
Yeah, you can check all our reviews and editorials out over at cutprintfilm.com. And, you know, maybe you want to give this episode a positive review.
Maybe.
Is Hillary McDuff in it?
No, we're already past this.
Listen, I already told you what you are. Do we have anything else we can plug?
Yeah, let's plug some stuff. I got something big I should plug.
Yeah.
I probably should do it. I wrote a book with my friend Joe Tonzelli, who also now writes for the site.
Yes, he does.
How to do a two-show with two assholes.
Man, you blew that one, buddy.
Good joke.
It was good.
Get in your fucking cage. Anyway, the book is called The House on Creep Street. Please go to Amazon.com and look it up. It's written under the pseudonym The Blood Brothers. It's a, not young adult, middle grade fiction book. It's set during Halloween. It's about three friends who go to a haunted house, similar to the Goonies and the Monster Squad, stuff like that.
It's a very real book. I held it in my hand.
Yeah, it's real and everything.
It looks nice. It smells crisp right off the press.
Yeah, it smells like fresh fallen leaves.
Right off the flesh press.
It is a flesh book, right?
Yeah, it is. It's bound in human skin.
The Necronomicon.
Yeah, exactly. So please go buy that book off Amazon and make me a rich, rich man. I get like 3 cents every 20 sales, I think.
That's all you need, though.
As always, go to antifanboy.com.
Or don't. And you should check out joystickjerks.com. They have a podcast about video games.
Oh, there was another one. Last podcast on the left?
Oh, yes. Yes. I heard that's a good one.
I have not listened to that, but I hear it's good.
It's just, they talk about Last House on the Left over and over.
Yeah,
it's such a ripe ground for material.
Well, there's also that remake.
Which one?
Last House on the Right.
Oh. Well, that joke didn't work either.